From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The visual lusciousness in the movie Black Panther came from the actors and the acting, yes, but it most powerfully came through the movie's costuming. Because there, in everything from the Black Panther's sleek suit to the regal headdress worn by the Queen Mother of Wakanda, there was the story of a culture, a people, albeit fictional, told through the fabric they wore. And those designs emerged from the creative mind of Ruth E. Carter, the Oscar-nominated costume designer who's worked on more than 40 films, from Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing and Malcolm X to Ava DuVernay's Selma and Lee Daniels' The Butler. This hour on Point, a conversation with Ruth E. Carter on African-American stories through fabric and film. And you can join us. What were your favorite costumes from Black Panther, Selma, or Amistad? And if wardrobes tell a story in film, what story are we seeing when Carter puts a pair of Nikes on Spike Lee or shimmering beads on Angela Bassett? What is your question for Ruth E. Carter? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining us now from Savannah, Georgia, is Ruth E. Carter. She is a two-time Academy Award nominee for Best Costume Design. She got that nod for Spike Lee's 1992 film Malcolm X and the 1997 Steven Spielberg film Amistad. She's received an Emmy nomination for her work on the 2016 remake of Roots. And of course, you saw her handiwork in the 2018 blockbuster Black Panther. Ruth E. Carter, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna. It's wonderful to be here.
It is such a delight to talk with you. And let me just come right out of the gates here by saying, I hope you get a third Oscar nod here for Black Panther.
That's great. Knock on wood.
my desk is wood, so there I am knocking
there
on
it. Thank you.
Now, you know, I started off, I introduced you by saying that I thought that really the most visually compelling part of the film, aside from the action and the actors themselves, were the costumes that you made. Because as I was watching Black Panther, I noticed that, the outdoor scenes are beautiful, but we don't actually see all that much of where the Wakandans live in great detail. But we do get to know so much about them and their culture through what they wear. I mean, did you see the costuming for the film as central to the storytelling as, you know, as we who watched it ended
absolutely
up seeing it?
Absolutely. And the costumes gave us an opportunity to delve into specific parts of the African tribal culture, as well as to bring so much color and vibrancy to the film. There's a lot of scenes that take place in a real expansive environment, and we were able to color that environment with the Lesotho blankets and the beautiful red Maasai color for the Dora Milaje, and, you know, it just was a feast of color.
Yeah. So tell me more about that. When you first were brought on board for Black Panther, how did you start the process? I mean, how early were you brought on board as being the costume designer?
Well, the interview process actually began my journey. I was given a little bit of information before the interview, and because I didn't know a lot about the Black Panther story, I read the comics, I looked at the illustrations in all of the comics before my interview, and then I amassed a collection of images of what I thought would be Wakanda. You know, whether they came from Afropunk or from just beautiful African diaspora photos of people wearing galas and jeans or African garments with some modern twist to it. And I collected all these images and went into Marvel Studios to meet with Ryan Coogler and brought them with me to share. You know, Marvel's like the CIA, you know, you walk through the halls and doors magically close behind you. But I had them all amassed in a Dropbox folder, and I didn't know at Marvel you can't really open Dropbox. So they were able to kind of break the code, if you would, and I shared these images with Ryan Coogler, and it turned out that some of the same images he had collected. So there was a the beginnings of a meeting of the minds,
right.
And just hearing him talk about, you know, growing up in Oakland, I could relate to my roots in Massachusetts and some of the things that we did as kids, like celebrating Kwanzaa and listening to the last poets and really sort of thinking about Afrofuture growing up. He kind of had that same indoctrination. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. a few years later than me, but still a part of both of our upbringings.
Yeah.
And that also created a connection. And I think that's how our journey began. It was a mutual respect of where we had both, you know, lied in respect to developing more Afrofuture and more African culture and sort of trying to answer the question of that connection between Africa and African American.
Yeah. So there's a lot to talk about there, but I also just, first of all, want to ask you a couple more specifics about
sure.
Designs that we see in Black Panther, because they are so spectacular. I mean, you know, from the...
Thank you.
In the comic, for example, the Queen Mother of Wakanda, I think she doesn't really wear anything like any kind of fantastical headdress.
No, she
but you put Angela Bassett in, like,
yes.
Wow.
Well,
right?
I could have put Angela Bassett in a paper bag and she would have still looked like the queen. But Ramonda in the comics is very low-key. She wears, like, yoga pants and a tunic, and her hair is in these wonderful dreadlocks, and she's very casual. So I just decided, with the permission of Ryan and Marvel and everyone that is involved, that we should actually understand who she is immediately. So when T'Challa lands on the tarmac there in the Royal Talon Fighter, and he descends the ship with Okoye and Nakia, he walks up to the Queen Mother. You can see her in her ceremonial dress for the Warrior Falls, and it's inclusive of this Ishikolo hat, which is the South African married woman's hat. Mm-hmm. And we developed a shoulder mantle or shoulder collar. They were both 3D printed, and the collar was based on, like, an African lace that we printed.
I mean, so 3D printed, as you said,
because
that gave it this look of both sort of delicacy and strength at the same time.
Yes.
It was like literally all I could look at in that scene.
Oh yeah, it was a feast. And you know, because it was such a large piece, I chose lace because I wanted it to do exactly that: look strong and delicate. So the light would push through it. And we looked at different African lace, and I chose one that I thought would be beautiful for that piece.
Well, I actually want to play a quick scene here from Black Panther. And you're going to hear Shuri, played by Letitia Wright. And she's showing her older brother, T'Challa, the king, played by Chadwick Boseman, her designs for his Black Panther suit before he takes on arms dealer Claw. Now, T'Challa's original outfit is a black full-body suit with a cat-eared helmet, but Shuri's new design fits inside a necklace made of spiky metallic teeth. And T'Challa doesn't really like the first necklace that Shuri shows him, which is a thick gold band adorned with white fangs. And so here's what happens.
If you're going to take on Claw, you'll need the best the design group has to offer. Exhibit A.
My design.
Old tech.
Old.
Functional, but old. Hey, people are shooting at me. Wait, let me put on my helmet.
Enough.
Now, look at this. Do you like that one?
Tempting. But the idea is to not be noticed.
A scene there from Black Panther. Ruthie Carter, so tell us about the Black Panther suit itself. How'd you design it, and what factors did you have to take into consideration?
Well, I look at Shuri, first of all, as she's like a costume designer.
Yeah.
She's designed the Panther suit. But Marvel has a development team that developed the Panther suit long before I came on, and they wanted to simplify by what was previously presented in Captain America Civil War. So the first suit was what he wore in that film. The new suit was streamed down, a lot simpler, and really clean lines. They had a Wakandan language that traveled and veined kind of throughout the suit. And once he was met with that kinetic force, that Wakandan language that veined throughout the suit, it would light up purple. But there was also kind of like a space in there where I was able to add a little bit of my aesthetic to it. And that's where I felt like the suit needed to feel like it was a royal cloth, a royal material. So we developed a surface texture that had a small design. It was a triangle. We called it the Okavango triangle, three-sided shape. And the triangle is kind of like the sacred geometry of Africa. It means the father, the mother, and the son, or the child, the father, mother, child. And it also is seen throughout the continent in many artistic forms in the beautiful art of Africa. So we developed this little triangle to sort of work side by side with this Wakandan language that traveled throughout the suit. And when you look at the two together, it really kind of feels like a royal a roller print. You know, you look at a lot of African fabric, you see these prints that are put together, these mixture of patterns. So it really starts to feel like he's not only the superhero, he's also this African king because of the style of the suit.
Well, Ruthie Carter, stand by for just a moment here. We're talking with Ruthie Carter. She is one of Hollywood's biggest costume designers. Costume design in 40 films, including Black Panther. We're going to talk a little bit more about her earlier career when we come back. She's worked a lot with Spike Lee, so this is Public Enemies Fight the Power from the 1989 movie Do the Right Thing. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Power to the people, no delay. Make everybody see in order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Ruth E. Carter. She is a two-time Academy Award nominated costume designer. She received that nomination for Best Costume Design for her work on Malcolm X and Amistad. And you have definitely seen her work on Black Panther, plus Do the Right Thing, The Butler, Selma, What's Love Got to Do with It? The list goes on and on. And she's talking with us this hour from Savannah, Georgia. And you can join us. What is your question for America's most preeminent costume designer who is telling the visual stories of African Americans on film through the fabric that she puts her actors and actresses in? Ruthie Carter, let me ask you, can we just jump back in time, deep back in time here? Because I read in a previous interview that you gave that your mother, when you were growing up, ended up being a very large influence on sort of how you see the world and maybe how you even got into costume design. Is that right?
Yes. When I was younger, say junior high school and through high school, my mom worked for the city. She wasn't a social worker, but she worked in the office of a social worker. It was a free counseling service for the city, and people could drop in and get services, counseling services. So she knew kind of like everyone on the street. You know, she knew homeless people. She knew people, you know, there was a guy named Tina, and my mother knew about him. And so we would ride with her through, downtown or down, she'd drop us off to school, and we'd see certain people, and we'd laugh and point or hide in the back seat. And my mom would say, he looks okay. He's got a clean shirt on today. And she could, just kind of sum them up in a different way. And it gave me pause, and it kind of showed me how to have a little more empathy for people and look at them differently. Sometimes she would even roll that window down to our dismay and say, hi, George, how are you today? And, that kind of view of, people is what I still use today to kind of embrace individuality. And it helps with embracing culture and embracing people and places and, just taking it all in.
Yeah. Because it suddenly occurs to me. I don't know why it suddenly occurred to me. I should have known this a long time ago. But on a day-to-day basis in the real world, what we wear is a deliberate choice that we make every day to communicate to the rest of the world who we are.
Sure,
and so when you're doing that, when you are designing costumes for film, that's essentially what you're doing, right? You're telling the untold portions of each character's story and sort of how they want to communicate that to the world constructed in that film and then to us as the viewers.
Yes, I feel that costume design can be defined as storytelling design. And when people want to associate costume design with fashion, and that's kind of in the world of costume design, but the overall goal is to tell the story, to work within a larger story of the script, and the smaller story that is each individual person has a story with what they wear.
Right. So then how did you get down the path of working in Hollywood? I mean, let me ask it this way. Mm-hmm. When did you first meet Spike Lee? Because you've done, 15 plus collaborations with him?
Yes, I have. It goes by fast. I met Spike Lee in Los Angeles. A friend who's a casting director now, Robbie Reed, introduced me to him. He actually came to a dance performance that I had done the costumes for. And in the lobby, I was showing my portfolio to one of my friends, and I guess he was observant and listening on. She's Gotta Have It had been completed, but it hadn't gone to the Cannes Film Festival yet. And Spike Lee, afterwards, we all were about the same age, and we all, wanted to hang out together, and we did. And he kept talking to me about getting film experience. And I really came from opera and dance and theater, and that's where my sights were set. So I kept, mulling around in my head this idea of getting film experience, and he suggested that I call USC or UCLA to their film department and sign up on a student thesis project. He said that would give me experience with being on a set and what that medium would be like for me. And so I did. And before I knew it, on a Saturday, I was on a USC student film doing the costumes.
Wow. Well, and then very soon thereafter came 1989 and Do the Right Thing. So I just want to play a clip from that.
Well, School Days was actually the first one, and then Do the Right Thing.
Then Do the Right Thing. Okay. I want to be sure all the Spike Lee fans out there are like, get your filmography right, Meg. Mostly just because I think Do the Right Thing is such an amazing movie still to this day. So I just want to play a quick clip from it here. This is a scene where you're going to hear Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Bug, out, and he asks Sal, the owner of a local pizzeria played by Danny Aiello, why there are only pictures of white celebrities on the wall of his pizza shop.
Hey, Sal, how come you got no brothers on the wall here?
You want brothers on the wall? Get your own place. You can do what you want to do. You can put your brothers and uncles and nieces and nephews, your stepfather, stepmother, whoever you want. See? But this is my pizzeria. American Italians on the wall only.
Take it easy,
and you, hey. Don't stop with me today.
What? Yeah, that might be fine, Sal, but you own this. Rarely do I see any American Italians eating in here. All I see is black folks. So since we spend much money here, we do have some say.
A scene from Spike Lee's 1989 Do the Right Thing, and Ruthie Carter was the costume designer on that, one of many collaborations she had with Spike Lee. Now, the thing about this film, Ruth, if I may say, is that it really, one of its many powers is it captures this particular moment where we see on screen very powerfully this sort of combination of the materiality of what the characters are wearing, like the high tops, the boom boxes, the printed tees, the jerseys. But also, as we heard in that clip, this moment of political consciousness as well.
Absolutely.
So how did that play out in your design?
Well, it was the 80s, which was the explosion of color blocking and really saturated color. Nike was a huge part of the clothing during that time. And guys wore colorful compression shorts underneath their basketball shorts. And we really wanted to represent, you know, pop culture of the moment and really create this this intensity of color in their environment. And so what we did was we created, like, tops out of African fabrics. And you see Buggin' Out wearing kente cloth shorts that we made. And it was also the hottest day of the year. And, you know, it was kind of a thing in New York where when it got really, really hot, that stuff would go down. You know, there could be riots, there could be shootings. And so because of the heat, the intensity of the heat, the intensity and the saturation of the color and the styles that we presented kind of all fed into the culmination of what eventually happens in the story.
Well, we've got a lot of callers who want to ask you some questions, Ruth. So if I may turn to them, that'd be a delight. We're talking with Ruthie Carter. She is a two-time Academy Award-nominated costume designer. She got those nominations for Malcolm X and Amistad, but those are two of the 40-plus films that she's been a costume designer
Has
on.
Has it been that many?
Yes! We double-checked this. And then, there's 20 more television projects as well. You're prolific, Ruth. And congratulations to you for that. So let's go to Tanya, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Tanya, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. And thank you for your show. I'm a regular listener. I appreciate you a whole lot. And thank you, Ruth, for your work. It's just beautiful. And I can't imagine you not winning an Oscar, so I'm not going to even worry about being nominated for it. But I noticed that it was an undercurrent of sexiness in Black Panther. And I don't know if that was your intention or just because the actors were just so gorgeous, like the statement that you made about Angela Bassett will look good in a paper bag.
Yeah.
But there were so many things that were just wow.
Yeah. I think the undercurrent is absolutely correct. I can only say that maybe because Ryan Coogler actually has a great respect for women, and there was a woman cinematographer, Rachel Morrison, a female production designer, Hannah Beekler, myself. I can't help but think that maybe we put a little zhuzh on it, you know? We certainly did give the Dora Milaje a uniform that covered their body, which was going away from what you typically see.
Yeah.
And Ryan Coogler was very sure and clear about that we wanted them to be of the highest order. And
that was your favorite costume, right?
It was my favorite costume because so much culture went into making that uniform. But we also did honor the female form. There is a harness that travels throughout that costume, and the lines of it really do move around the body in a very sensuous or sexy way. So it's a uniform, but it's a woman's uniform, and it's functional.
Well, Tanya, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Joe, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. And Sister Carter, thank you so much for portraying Africans and also African Americans in such a positive influence. Question that I have is that growing up in the 60s, we were fed with images like Tarzan, and through your art and design, you have actually unlocked the future for those of us who travel. My wife is from South Africa, so with Sotho and Zulu and the Sotho designs just popping, what do you see the future of us in film and folks like you who are going to chart the way? And because I'm in rural Wisconsin, I'm going to hang up and listen. Thank you so much. And Susan Bonanno, Masnyan.
Thank you, Joe. Go ahead,
Thank
Ruth.
You, Joe. Well, I think that the Black Panther is, it gave us a platform for storytelling and doing it in our own way. Ryan Coogler and his writing partner, Joe Cole, wrote the Black Panther, a story about the first black superhero, and they did it their way. And I think that's the overriding, I think, future for us, black cinema, is that we can tell all kinds of stories. We can actually, you know, break out of the mold of, you know, the guy who is a bad guy, you know, the black kid who's doing wrong. We can actually tell so many rich stories that we have, not only as African Americans, now as Africans. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I think huge for the culture and for black cinema.
Well, I'm wondering, Ruth, do you feel a special responsibility in what you do? Because throughout American history, we have seen time after time so many negative visual representations of African Americans. And I'm thinking, you know, broadly throughout the culture, I mean, outright racist representations. And so here you have the opportunity to clothe actors and tell stories in, you know, still what's one of the most powerful cultural media mm-hmm. that we have, film. Do you feel a special responsibility to?
I do, because I can't help but be beholden to my own experience and my own vision of my community. And a lot of times what has been portrayed is something that I didn't necessarily see or know about either. So when you see in Selma, Coretta and the children are dressed for a meal at the table, some might say, wow, they certainly are, you know, dressy for that meal. But I grew up in a culture that you got dressed for Sunday dinner. You didn't go to the table in your pajamas. I mean, you do maybe now, but in the 60s, you certainly did not. So there's a lot of responsibility to our culture and to our stories and our messages and visually that I feel connected to, and want to tell as many of those visual stories as I can. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really had an impact, and especially Black Panther's had an impact, because I want to just play a little bit of tape here, because back in April, Zenindra Enwemeka, she's a reporter at our home station here of WBUR, she spoke to Ebi Ihiono, who is a owner of Elegance African Fashion Designs in Dorchester, Massachusetts. And after Black Panther came out, Ihiono said that her clothing, which usually sells in summer, was on back order in the freezing winter months of Boston, because everybody wanted to buy prints that they felt were related to what they had seen in Black Panther.
It makes me happy. It makes me now feel like I can dress like this and walk into anywhere, and people will stop not to like gaze and be like, who is that? What is she wearing? That they now look with admiration, like, oh my God, I love that. Can I have that? Can you make that? That's what I get lately. Anybody who sees me now, they stop and say, oh my God, I've been looking for someone who can make, that's like Black Panther. Do you know who can make it? I say, ask no more. You are at the right place. I can help you.
Ruth Carter, what do you think about that? She doesn't feel like she has to explain anymore.
Oh, that gives me chills. It gives me joy. Black Panther gave people context. They can look at things now, and even if they say, oh, that looks like Black Panther and that looks like Wakanda, because we used real African nations and people and tribal customs, it really does land it and root it right in the context of the continent. So, you know, I am overjoyed with that fact that it increased commerce for the African diaspora here in this country.
Well, and in fact, I think I'm most taken by the part where she says people don't stop her and look at her like, what is she wearing? It's more like, where can I get that now?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, we're talking with Ruth E. Carter. She is the costume designer behind the amazing fabric you saw in Black Panther. She's also a two-time Academy Award-nominated costume designer. We're going to talk a lot more about her other films when we come back. You're hearing right now Glory. This is Common and John Legend from the Selma soundtrack. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Oh, one day when the war is won, we will be sure.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Smart journalism. Fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking today with Ruth E. Carter. She is a two-time Academy Award-nominated costume designer. She got those nods for Malcolm X and Amistad, and her most recent work, you've seen it, it's in Black Panther. She's also done the costume design for everything from Do the Right Thing to The Butler to What's Love Got to Do with It, and Selma as well. And I wanted to just play a quick clip from Selma, and you're going to hear David Oyelowo. He, of course, played the role of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in Ava DuVernay's 2014 film. And in this scene, he's giving a speech before leading a voting rights march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. And he's wearing a suit with a black and teal striped tie and a thigh-length black overcoat.
The president doesn't want us to march today. The courts don't want us to march. But we must march. We must stand up. We must make a massive demonstration of our moral certainty. I'm so glad we're here together today. I thank you for standing up, for we shall be victorious in our quest. We shall cross the finish line hand in hand. For we shall overcome.
A scene from the 2014 film Selma. Ruthie Carter, here's one of the cases, several cases in which you were doing a film depicting an actual person from history. So how did you go about deciding how to design the clothing for David, who's playing Dr. King?
Well, there are several images that I could draw from of Martin Luther King. There's several books, pictorial books that have been written. And so the little nuances of his character were where I delved into the design. One is that Martin Luther King was a robust man. And he, if you look at him in his suits, you could notice that, you know, there was a little fleshy area around the collar of his neck where he buttoned his shirt and it would kind of roll over the top. And David Oyelowo, the brilliant actor that he is, he gained weight for the role. And I wanted to sort of help that along, and I made his shirt collars slightly smaller than what would be required so that I could also see that little neck roll that happened at the collar of King's shirt.
I love that detail. It's not something I would have ever noticed, but it's all what goes into sort of the whole experience of sort of occupying a character.
Yeah, and the costume has to support the actor. Yeah. It has to help support their performance. And just looking at a lot of black and white photographs, you have to create a color palette that supports the mood of the story as well as is an accurate depiction of the colors during that time.
Now, did David ever say the shirt collars were too tight?
He never complained.
Okay.
I would say he never complained. Maybe it just felt right for him. And when I hear that performance in particular, I really hear Martin Luther King more than I hear David Oyelowo.
Right. What is your question for Ruthie Carter and how she tells these African-American stories through fabric on these amazing films that we've been talking about? Let's go to Sarah, who's calling from Lowell, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna, and hello, Ms. Carter. I am so excited that you are having a show talking about this. When I saw Black Panther in the theater, I was just blown away not only by the film, but also by its potential as a teaching opportunity. I'm
yes.
a teacher who's been working on a project on how we can use textiles and clothing to teach science, technology, engineering, and math topics. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like you've provided such a rich palette here of opportunities. We don't just send students to, you know, be in a robotics team or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they could learn 3D printing. They could talk about textiles with special technology in them, like the Black Panther's suit that stores kinetic energy. Well, what kinds mm-hmm. of other energy could you put into a fabric? How would you do it? There are just so many opportunities here, and it was so exciting.
Sarah, wonderful. Thank you for your call. Ruth, you have a response for her?
Yes. What I love about Shiri's lab is that it's an exploration in what kids can do. You never can underestimate what your children can do. And she certainly does represent that. You know, she, I imagined, was the mastermind behind the 3D printing of the Queen's crown and her shoulder mantle. She created the Black Panther suit. And I think it's just a great opportunity to use it as a vehicle for learning.
Hmm. Ruth, if I may, I want to talk for a minute or two or hear from you for a couple of minutes about Amistad in particular, mm-hmm. one of the films that you received an Oscar nomination for your costume design there. Of course, that's the mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg film about revolt on a Spanish slave ship. And so we have a scene here. Again, the film's 1997, and you're going to hear the leader of the slave revolt, Joseph Sinkay, played by Djiman Unsu, who stands up during the mutiny trial. He's put on trial for his slave revolt and repeatedly cries for his freedom.
Give us free.
Your Honor, please instruct the defendant that he cannot disrupt these proceedings with such a...
Give us free!
If we are to have any semblance of order in this court, Your Honor...
Give us
and
us
he free!
Give us free!
Keep crying out, give us free, or anything else...
Give us free! While
I am trying to question this witness!
Give us free!
Give us free!
A scene from the 1997 film Amistad, that scene where the leader of the slave revolt, Josephine Kay, is put on trial. Ruth Carter, if I remember correctly, in that scene, Sinque is wearing Western clothes, right?
Yes. The abolitionist, in the reading, we read that the abolitionist gave clothing to the Africans, and there was an account that said in the courtroom they looked like doves sitting in the gallery. And so I used those words to create clothing that was donated, especially for Sinque, who would have been given clothing from the attorneys that were supporting the case. And I also wanted to present him in a royal manner, very regal at this moment where he says, give us free. And you'll notice that the Africans sitting there in the gallery are mostly in these white billowy shirts of the period. And I wanted to evoke the feeling of doves.
Huh. Now, is it also, so maybe I was reading this wrong, because I thought that part of the reason why the slightly baggy fit on Joseph was, as you said, like he had to wear borrowed clothes. Mm-hmm. And that so that they didn't quite fit properly, but nevertheless gave, as you were saying, this regal feel to him.
Yes, yes. And that was the shirt of the period was a very billowy, pleated, ruffled shirt.
Yeah. And this is a particularly interesting film to talk about because you also did the costume design for white royalty on the film.
Yes. Yeah. John Adams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, based on, you know, art history, I looked at the composition of some of the great painters and also the history of the court case of the Amistad. All those things were important to paint that picture of royalty and the Africans. As you know, when they first embark in a mystic Connecticut, they are wearing blankets. And I looked at the cargo list on the Amistad ship and saw that they were carrying wool and linens and leather. So I imagined that if they were marooned in the Eastern Seaboard for some time, that they would have raided the cargo and done some things that would hearken back to their origin of Sierra Leone in Africa, which was Muslim and Christian. And so I made it a look of wrapped turbans, wrapped blankets in their traditional ways. They even were able to hand sew leather slabs together to cover their feet because it would have been much colder than it would have been in Africa just being marooned there on the eastern side of the country.
Wow. Well, we've got more questions coming in for you about Black Panther. On our website, Lars Grant West asks, the Black Panther film and its design were obviously very respectful in regards to African culture and culture in general. With so many living and still active cultures and tribes in Africa, how difficult was it to come up with something that felt specifically African without being overtly derivative from any one African culture?
Well, Ryan and Hannah created a guideline, a manual that explained which tribes of Wakanda would be inspired by which nations of Africa. So there was a little bit of a guidebook that told us, you know, this is where you're going to go and get your inspiration for that tribe. And that was very helpful. Also, to be able to combine all of the elements together in a beautiful way and not make it confusing was also the challenge. So when you look at the Dora Milaje in particular, you'll see that they have a tabard that runs down the center front of their costume. And so we beaded that in the tradition of the Turkana tribe. And we also wanted it to feel like it was a special honor to have this uniform, and therefore this tabard was had special symbolism. And so there were charms on it for protection. There was also a little charm on it that would signify what tribe you came from, because all of the Dora Milaje came from different tribes in Africa. So that all kind of told their story within the costume.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Hope, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hope, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna and Ruth. My question is about how Ruth develops costumes that display and describe a character's culture, particularly how she finds a happy medium between portraying the African culture and the African-American pop culture.
Huh. Hope, thank you for your call.
Well, I think you can see the happy medium in some aspects of Killmonger's costume. He is an anthropologist. He's unapologetic. He certainly doesn't enter into the museum in a tweed suit and a vest. He comes in a jean jacket and drop crotch pants and Alexander McQueen boots. But then he is also wearing some African symbols around his neck. His hair is in dreadlocks. You get the sense that there's a dichotomy that's going on with his character right away. And then as he speaks, you see that he's educated about cultures around Africa. So there's that fine balance between African American and African coming together. There were other ways in which we accomplished the delicate balance, again with the Dora Milaje and their skirts, their back skirts, that was based on the Himba tribe of Africa, where they stretched the edges of their leather skirts and decorated and hammered them with metals. And we did the same thing, but we didn't overtly create a Himba look. It was just the touches of what they culturally did that we added to that costume.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Nali, who's calling from Miami, Florida. Nali, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling from a nonprofit organization called Superhero Leadership Academy, and we believe that superheroes exist within us. And it's a mentorship organization for youth, and I wanted to ask the question of what specifically is your superpower or skill set or talent and ability, and who is a superhero in your life who's helped you progress so far in your career professionally and personally?
Thank you for your call. Ruth, what is your superpower?
Okay. I think my superpower is to see past people, to see where I can look at them and say, I think we should go in this direction or that direction with your look. So I transform my mind when I look at a person, I look at their face and I look at their body structure and an image comes to mind. I feel like that's my superpower.
Well, we just got about a minute left to go here, Ruth, and it's been so delightful to talk with you. And in fact, one of the great pleasures is to also just listen back to all these amazing films that you've worked on. I'm wondering, is there a kind of film that you haven't done yet that you'd love to do the costume design for?
I keep saying different things when I'm asked that question. I love certain actors. I love Christian Bale and Tom Hardy and Mariska Ali, Mahershala Ali. I also like stories about triumph. Like I was just told about the regiment from Chicago that went to France to fight and then they came back to this country and they didn't have the same freedoms. And I look at the images of those soldiers and I go, oh, I want to tell that story. And then I think about musicals and I think, wow, I would love to do an old musical that maybe Pearl Bailey had been in or Lena Horne and do it in a Moulin Rouge kind of a way. It would be amazing. So I'm all over the place with that answer.
Well, I'm hoping that any director that hears this and has got a project like that coming down the pipeline immediately reaches out to you. Ruth E. Carter, she's an Academy Award nominated costume designer. You saw her work in Black Panther, Do the Right Thing, But the Butler, What's Love Got to Do with It, Selma, and so many more. By the way, we've got some concept art and how it actually appeared in Black Panther at our website, onpointradio.org. But Ruth, it has been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Great. Thank you. I've had a great time.
And we're going to close today again with some more music from Black Panther. This is All the Stars, a lead from the soundtrack. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.